It was an absolute pleasure once again to meet Nicola Zacha for one of my nostalgia interviews. Nicola is based in Ontario in Canada, and we spoke on a previous Nostalgia Interviews podcast about the children's books that Nicola has been writing. We discuss in more detail some of Nicola's background in this particular interview, and Nicola talks about an operation that she had when she was born. She was written off, told that she wouldn't be able to go to school, but she managed to overcome her disability. She talks about how maths was a particular area that she needed to work on. We learn about her earliest memories, going to Florida, why she wants to help other children, the importance of unconditional love. We learn how Nicola used to spend her summers, why she thinks they were blessed. We find out about the music that she listened to, including Olivia Newton-John. We find out about her work teaching in a hospital daycare environment and reading to children. She talks about the teachers who inspired her, the role of Christmas in churches. We learn that religion was important to Nicola when she was growing up. She talks about her Christmas book, how she became an author after her dad was diagnosed with dementia, and she bought him a puppy. And Nicola talks about the importance of closing the gap of division that people are feeling. Nicola talks about how things came full circle when she looked after her father. She talks about the importance of connecting with children, especially through books. We learn that Nicola is in touch with friends from her past and why she doesn't like to sit still for too long. It was a real pleasure for the second time to interview Nicola Zacha for my Nostalgia Interviews podcast. My name is Chris DC. So it is a huge pleasure once again, Nicola Zacha. And do you want to say a little bit, Nicola, about where you are, where you are in the world?
I'm from Ontario, Canada, but I do have roots in England. My grandmother was from Bournemouth, England, and lived there till she was a teenager. But I definitely have English roots.
Yeah. And did you know your grandmother?
No, she passed away when I was a baby, but she was a good grandmother because she was in hospital when I was a baby, but she still made me a clown. Out of these pieces of felt, she made me a beautiful clown. Actually going to look into getting that, the arm sewn on. And I'm just so honored that she would take the time to think of, I'm her youngest grandchild. And she still wanted to remember me, even though, you know, she wasn't well herself.
And how did she end up moving from the UK to Canada? What was the particular draw? Why did she make that huge journey from one continent to another?
Well, her husband was Irish, and my father's parents too. They came from out west and Europe and. Well, his grandmother was American, but my grandfather was from England on my father's side too. But they were offering farmland in Ontario, so a lot of people came to farm.
You obviously live in Ontario. Is that where you were born?
I was born in Ontario, yes, Kitchener, Ontario.
And so obviously you have this rich sort of tapestry that goes all the way back to England. I'm guessing, you know, much earlier in the 20th century. But do you want to say, so we know a bit about your grandmother. Do you want to say a little bit, Nicola, about what your parents did?
Yes. So my dad worked on the railroad and was a conductor. And my mom was a secretary for the Teachers Federation. So I had a chalkboard before a lot of people had a chalkboard. And I had lots of rides on the train. So I was very blessed and very good parents, very fortunate.
Yeah, because my dad worked on the railways over in Britain. So one of the great appeals, maybe I didn't make as much of it as I should or could have done. I used to get free rail travel. So actually Bournemouth, funny enough, is one of the places that we sometimes used to go as a family on holiday. And my parents went there for their honeymoon and they went back there for their 25th. Wow. Wedding anniversary in 1993. And I remember speaking to them in the days when we used to have public telephone boxes. And so I got lots of sort of associations through that particular link. So the railway link was a huge, even though ironically I went to a university in Wales where there wasn't a railway line. So of course, all that free travel was only useful out of term time. But yeah. Never mind.
Yes, it was only useful for my siblings and I, as long as we were in school. But I used to take, when I was 13, I used to take the train and then the subway and then a bus to school. And every day for a year. So the train came in very handy. I went to a private school for a year because I had trouble with math. And they helped me with the math and it went very well. And some stops I would sleep through. So then my parents would have to drive to the next stop to pick me up. But the conductors all watched over me. I was very fortunate.
So they obviously all knew you. You obviously did this journey very regularly.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did it for a year. Sometimes we'd miss the train and my parents would drive me to Toronto. But most days I was on the train. They made a lot of sacrifices.
Absolutely. And I'm just thinking as well, having a mother who's a teacher, how did you find that? Because I suppose that there are pluses and minuses, I would imagine, because obviously, to an extent, even though she may not have been your teacher at school, there's a sense in which you could never sort of get away from the world of education. Is that how it worked for you? Did you sort of see that that was a good thing, being able to go to your mother and asking her questions?
She was a secretary for the teachers, so she was very familiar with the curriculum and everything. And it was actually very, very beneficial because she had the connections to the teachers and she was able to help me a lot with projects. Projects were very good.
And it's funny, you mentioned maths was not your favorite subject. Is that something that you had to work even harder at? You mentioned that there were family who could help you with that. Is that something that's always sort of carried? Because I've got many friends who sort of to this day might say things like, oh, you know, I don't have those particular qualifications.
No, that's true. When I was born, I was only a few weeks old and they had to do an operation on my skull because there was no soft spot in my skull. So they had to put a shunt in and they painted a very dim view to my parents and said, she will never go to school. And my father said, you're wrong. She will be all right. I will take care of her. And he did. And I remember saying to him, Dad, you don't have to be so protective. And he said, no, I made a promise to you. And I will always keep that promise. So don't ever say that to me again. And yeah, he literally did. And he used to work on math with me by the hour. You know, and then in the summertime, my mom was off because school was out and she would work with me. And I remember getting Smarties for reading each word. So yeah, I was very blessed. They both worked very hard.
And it works that way sometimes, doesn't it? That if there's a subject at which you don't excel, you kind of compensate in other areas. It might be writing, and of course you are an author. So is that something that you were very conscious of? That it's like, you know, math didn't really work, but it meant that there were other areas where you could particularly excel?
Yes, that's right. And that's what I did. And reading and writing is where I excelled more. But my dad still was very, very patient. And I would say, oh, I don't want to do anymore. He would ask me questions and he said, oh, one more. And he just was very strong in encouraging me and never gave up. And so I never disliked math because I knew that he was always going to be there for me and we would work on. It didn't matter what time of the day, he would say, sit down there, I'm going to ask you some questions. That's what we did.
And is it the sort of subject that you ever thought in later life that you wanted to return to? I ask that because a week or so ago here in the UK, students got their A-level results. And so, you know, just to discover if they're off to university and so on. But the week before that, it was the turn of the GCSEs, which is the qualifications that students take or pupils take at 15 or 16. And there was a case of one man in the news in Britain who I think he's 92 and he's the oldest person to get his GCSE maths because he failed. I think it was in something like 1946, so just after the Second World War. So this was his chance. It took him all these, you know, 70 or whatever years in order to get the qualification that had eluded him. It may not be, you know, you may not want to wait till you're 92, but is it the same for you? Is there a sense in which even today you still want to almost like crack that code? You know, does it still bother you that maths might be a subject that wasn't as easy as some of the others, or have you sort of let that slide?
Well, my dad, because of my dad's support and encouragement, he always wanted to make sure that I had enough math to be able to do daily tasks and everything, like percentages, you know, for sales when you're going shopping. Yeah. And, you know, I can always do that, which is, I'm happy about, you know, and as long as, and they have so much more to offer as far as support with math, you know, in dealing daily, like computers and so forth. And so I'm good that way. He did prepare me that way to make sure that I would be secure. And so I'm content where I'm at. I did go back to college later in life to finish my ECE certificate. And oh my goodness, that is a shock. Like, because it's such a different way and they have so many different new courses. And so I'm glad I did it, but then I was glad I was finished too.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's the same with me. Maths was never my strong point, but I was kind of glad to have got as far as I did at school, but then to focus in the areas where I felt a bit more competent, shall we say. And just thinking of, you know, focusing on your upbringing in Ontario, what, Nicola, would you say are your earliest memories?
So my earliest memory was, well, I had a wonderful childhood because I spent it every year in at the cottage in the summertime. So that was wonderful. And as far as a trip, I remember going to Florida and I rode the elephant at Busch Gardens. Now they don't do that anymore, probably because of lawsuits. if they have little children and they happen to fall off the elephant. But I had no fear of the elephant, and I said, I want to ride that elephant, and that's what I did. It was wonderful.
So, yeah, well, I was just thinking with my own children about particular animals that we only ever perhaps see in a zoo. But, you know, how often have we seen an elephant outside of a zoo? But I guess these are things that are pretty foundational when you're growing up. And it sounds like it's that sort of memory that has stayed with you. I mean, you went to Florida. Was that something that you often tended to do? Was Florida like the obvious holiday destination?
Yes, it was. And, well, right from when I was a little child, because... So when I went to start kindergarten, they said, oh, no, she cannot go to school. And that's what the doctors had warned. And so then my mom said, OK, we're going to visit your aunt in Florida. So that's what we did. And then the school board phoned my dad and said, where is she? And he said, oh, right now she's crossing the border into the United States. And they said, well, you bring her back here and she will be in school. And I was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did go to Florida. Right from age 5.
And I'm just thinking as well, because you mentioned this a few times now about how it was assumed that maybe school wouldn't be much use to you, or you wouldn't be able to, but because of them.
As perceptually handicapped, my dad did not accept that. And he said, no, she will be all right. So, and that's the way he always felt.
And are you still in touch? Well, or maybe not even now, but I'm thinking about in the years since, with some of those people. I mean, so some maybe the school teachers. I know in the first interview you mentioned one of the teachers who was particularly influential for you. But is there a sense in which you've sort of felt the need to prove almost? I mean, in a way, you don't need to do that because you've got your books and obviously the fact that you're still here proves that you overcame that diagnosis. But has there been Have you always found that need to prove to people, to almost maybe go back to some of those same people and say, look, you know, you made this diagnosis and you were wrong?
Yes. I think as a teenager, you probably go through that, you know, but as an adult, I just want to help other children. And that's where my books allow me to do that and help them achieve what they're meant to achieve too. You know, and it's funny because the other day when I was rollerblading with Marley, I came across this little girl and she was in the daycare where I taught and she could not walk and she had braces on and everything. And she was a baby and she just could not walk. And everybody just kind of gave up on her and said, well, she doesn't walk. And I said, well, I will work with her. And I did. And she would be walking all the time with me. And now she's a teenager and she's running around. And I was saying to the parent, it's amazing. You know, I said, I remember working with her as a little girl and she would only walk with me. And now she's running and doing well. I find it's very rewarding helping children the way I was helped.
Yeah. And that must be really satisfying because in a way it means that you're able to to square the circle, as it were. In other words, people helped you, yes, and you're indebted to them. And by the same token, you're able to apply that same, you know, coming from your own experience, you're able to, yes, to help others who perhaps are otherwise going to be forgotten and perhaps even cast off.
Yes, exactly. Yes, unconditional love. Yeah. My dad always loved me unconditionally, and I share that message with the world.
And do you have any siblings?
Yes, I have an older sister and brother. Once a baby, always a baby.
Absolutely. No. Well, do you know, it's always funny sometimes, because I always think with my own children as well, that if the eldest wasn't the eldest, but was the youngest, or if you moved the positions around, how would it affect their interactions and their behavior? Because some of them, you can only, you know, the way that they behave is all about where they fit in the family and in the pecking order, you know, whether they're number, yes, one or number two and so on. Did you have any of that growing up? Was there always a sense in which, you know, you always had your,
yes,
your older sisters?
Yes, my sister took very good care of me right from the start. And my parents always remind me of that. Your sister was very good to you as a baby. She took very good care of you. My brother, it was kind of an intrusion for him, this baby coming along when he was 10. But he was very good to me too. I still have a pair of cowboy boots that he bought me when we went out west for the first time, because he's out in Calgary. So I'm very blessed that way.
Yes, I think Marley was keen there to be part of the interview. And just thinking about that, particularly then when a new baby comes along, and of course it can be a bit of a threat sometimes to the children, who think, you know, hang on a minute, you know, I'm the baby in this family. What's this?
Yes.
Well, who's this, yes, imposter who has just taken my place?
Yes, exactly. Definitely a big adjustment. Yeah. But he's still the only boy, so that makes, yeah, up for,
yeah,
for having a new sister at 10 years old.
And are you still in touch with your siblings?
Yes, I am. She lives a couple hours away, in just outside of Toronto, in Oakville. My brother's in Calgary, so he's a little further, but a very quick flight.
You've already answered this question, but the things that you enjoyed doing when you were young, you mentioned some of the, you know, the train riding or the extra educational support that you had. But are there any particular? I mean, you mentioned rollerblading now as something that you do with Marley, but you know, is that something or anything like that something that was also a big part of your childhood?
Yes, I was very fortunate. We used to go to Florida every year for like over 20 years. Like every winter. So that was very exciting. So I always will have a very close bond to Florida. You know, it will always have a special place in my heart. And I still have friends, very dear friends there. And then the summers were spent, you know, at a cottage. So lots of great memories of swimming. And I love the water. That's why Marley and I are always at the beach, because I grew up being close to the water. So it was always wonderful.
And was it a cottage? Was it like the same cottage that your family rented out every year?
Yeah, my parents owned it. And right from when I was a little child, so till I was 15, then they sold the cottage and then they bought a few more. So we always had a cottage and a place to visit in the summertime and make wonderful memories of, you know, being at the beach and late summer nights, the fires and, mm-hmm, yes, what my childhood was filled with. So I was very blessed.
Yeah. And what about things like music? When we were, I sent you the questions in advance, or the very generic questions that I'm going to ask, and I know a little bit less, rather less about the Canadian music scene than I know the British one, but can you remember what sort of music you were interested in listening to when you were growing up? What was the sort of the sounds of the time? What was in the charts? That sort of thing when you were growing up?
Yes, Bill Collins and Shania Twain and, oh, of course, Olivia Newton-John was one of my favorite movies. I just loved her.
Yeah.
And she had a beautiful voice. And, I always loved the songs from that movie. And, yeah, I think those were some of the top music players that I listened to. Yeah, I always have the radio going on and listening to, and had the Walkman and, actually, yeah, I still have a Walkman to listen to when I rollerblade, but they're not so common anymore. But I still like to listen.
Is it the same one that you had when you were young? I'm fascinated.
No, it's a much smaller version now, so that's convenient. Just fits right in my pocket.
And do you choose what you listen to? I mean, I assume it's not radio. It's more like an MP3 player, I'm guessing, that you listen to. But, you know, are you do you find that when you're rollerblading around, is it the music from those days, from when you were growing up, the Phil Collins, yes, and John, is. That you listen
yes.
to?
Yes, I listen to the radio station with the music from those days.
And there is something timeless, because I'm I don't know, it was almost like a sort of future-proofing, I almost feel, in my own case, that I used to record, certainly when I was at university, I used to record a lot of stuff off the radio, and I digitized it all a few years ago, and I listened to these tapes. So I've got this collection of probably, you know, 10 or even 15 years' worth of material that I listen to on a loop. I think I worked out there were about 80 hours or 90 hours. So, you know, it takes a good few, depends how much driving I do, but, you know, I get through this every, what, 3-4 months or something like that, and I just listen to all this stuff, and of course it brings me all the way back to those particular days and particular memories that I associate with the times they were recorded, the people I may have listened to the radio with. It's actually very good for the mind. I find that it sort of puts me back. I can almost smell and feel and touch the particular places and the people who I grew up with, and the music is a good way of conjuring that up. It sounds like it's very similar in your case.
Yes, that's the same with me. It's a very feel-good exercise, and they say that's actually very good for the mind, because you're actually dancing, so it takes a little bit of skill to listen to the music and move too. It fills you with happy thoughts.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Olivia Newton-John. One of the first records I ever bought was her song Physical. This was in 1981.
Yes.
And of course I remember the video for that, and she's in a gym, but of course, yes, because of her recent passing, that then I sort of went back over some of that material, but you're absolutely right, it's the music from growing up, from childhood, that really does play a very sort of influential role. So in your case, you are literally listening to the same sounds,
right? Yes, exactly. Yes, it was very tragic, Olivia Newton-John's recent passing, and I did listen to her music. Yes, Marley. Yes. Would you like to come up here? Marley? Yes. No. Mommy's talking, you know. But Marley, okay, I'm not going up there with you, but you can come up in here with me.
So this is the sort of time, Nicola, when we wish that this was a TV rather than an audio interview.
Right. Marley had a late start. She has anxiety from garbage trucks.
Oh.
Marley is afraid those garbage trucks will eat her. And it's funny, because Marley can relate to the children right now. Anxiety for children is at an all-time high. And Marley definitely can relate to that, because she has very slow mornings. We just have to cuddle and not move, just sit and cuddle. And then Marley's not ready to start the day till afternoon, because it's been too stressful for her.
And you're absolutely right, because some people are night owls, some people are very good at being up in the morning. I've got some colleagues who will sometimes say, can you do a meeting at, you know, 8 o'clock or 8:30 in the morning? And I'm thinking, you know, often I'm still up at 2 a.m. and I'm thinking, oh gosh, you know, whereas I'll stay in work a bit later. But it's funny, we all have our own rhythms, and it's almost as though it's just innate in us. There's nothing we can do about that. Some people are morning people, right. Some people are not, and you know, there's only so much you can do to tweak that.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. It has to be an effort on their part too. You can't really force, you know, what they want to do or not do.
Yeah.
But encouragement usually helps.
And the next question that I've got on my list is one about what inspired you to enter your profession. And I know that although there's a teaching element, or you I think were thinking, am I right in saying of training as a teacher, or you were a classroom assistant. Like, teaching was something that at one point you considered following.
Yes, I did. I was a teacher in daycares, and my last teaching job was in a hospital daycare.
Oh.
And I used to love reading with the children. That was one of my favorite things to do. Yeah. So it was a natural flow to go into writing children's books.
And I was just thinking as well that you probably would categorize yourself, would you, as an author?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So do you want to say a bit about how all that started for you?
So how that started is when my dad was diagnosed with dementia. I was overwhelmed. It was very overwhelming. And then my old boyfriend at the time suggested that I get my dad a puppy. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so overwhelmed. I don't know about a puppy. And then we broke up, and I thought, okay, I guess I will get a puppy. So I bought my dad a puppy, and he was funny because he said, no puppy, no puppy whatsoever. And then I and my friend said, oh, just go ahead. I was talking to my friends, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I don't know. He's saying no puppy. And she said, no, I think he will be fine, my friend Kathy. And she said, I think he will be fine once you get the puppy. So I went ahead and bought Marley, and I brought, and he instantly fell in love with Marley. So then I entered Marley in a Facebook contest, and Marley won. It was against all these American dogs. And if you Google St. Thomas dog races the cover, you can see Marley and my dad and I. And because the CTV News came to the house and interviewed the three of us. And so the contest was for Marley to be the inspiration for a book. And then the illustrator was having some personal issues, so the author didn't want to go ahead and write the book. And I said, well, I've been on the news, so, and I've told everybody that we're going to write a book. So there was a publisher in the group named Divya, and she said, if you want to write a book, I will publish it for you. And I said, oh my goodness, I've never wrote. And she said, oh, it's fine. You just tell the story about Marley. And that's how I started.
By the sound of it then, you didn't have a dog, is that right, when you were growing up?
I did, quite a few dogs. And that's what my boyfriend had noticed at the time, that he said, you're so good with dogs, you know, and it helps sometimes to have someone remind you of what your passions are. You know, because if someone's standing observing, they notice, you know, things that you might take for granted. Like, I've always loved dogs. And so I didn't. And then for a while, we didn't have a dog. And because the last dog we had had, I was walking him in the wintertime, and he pulled like away from me with his leash, and he ran out and was hit by a car. And that was devastating. So we didn't have a dog for quite a while. And then Marley came into our lives. But like, I was visiting with family dogs, and my nephews had dogs, and I really loved them. And my brother always had dogs. And so I did, after you mentioned that, I did remember how much I do love dogs.
And you're right, because one of my sons is really passionate about animals, particularly cats. And, you know, no one else in the family really is. But it's very calming for him that when he's with cats, he seems to be very much at ease. And I think that maybe he's just somebody who will find when he's older that having a pet to look after will actually be good for him. And, you know, that might not apply to his siblings, who, a bit like me sometimes, or perhaps because we didn't have pets when we were growing up, maybe a bit more trepidatious around pets. But it sounds like your dad was one round, is that right? So he wasn't too keen on the dog at first, but he came round to the idea?
No, he wasn't too keen to begin with. But the moment he saw Marley, he definitely went into protective mode, and Marley was the baby, and he was taking care of that baby, no matter what.
And just thinking as well about, I think we touched on this in the first interview, but about teachers who have inspired you. And I don't know if you're still in touch with any of those teachers, but are there any particular teachers who were particularly influential, who particularly stood out for you?
Yes, it was. I remember, like, I did have the teacher, Mrs. Joan, from England, and I remember her having me over to her house to play with her daughter, and I just felt so honored that I was able to go to the teacher's house. That was my grade three teacher. And then I had a grade one teacher, and she had an adopted daughter, and she was born on the same day as me. So I always thought that was really cool and felt very special.
Yeah, and that's often the best way, isn't it? That sometimes, yeah, mimicking is exactly it. That sometimes you look at the reasons why they particularly inspired you, and you want to be able to, and it's a homage to them, but it's also a way of saying, well, you know, the way that they communicated had a real impact on you. Therefore, I find that when I'm teaching with my own students, I'm sort of channeling in some ways those who inspired me all those years ago, and it feels very natural, feels very right, actually, in that sense. You kind of feel that you're carrying on an important tradition.
Yes, absolutely.
And there are always questions, perhaps around politics or religion, that sometimes a lot of people will avoid. But before we started the recording, you were talking about religion in the context of Marley. But do politics, and, you know, specifically in the Christmas book.
Yes, and I do have a book. The Christmas book that touches on religion. And the one Christmas, my dad and I took the train down to Toronto on Christmas Day. And they have beautiful churches in Toronto. And so I took pictures that day. We just walked around Toronto and looked at the churches. And it's a gentle way to present religion to children, which I think is the best way to, as you say, it can be a very sensitive topic, politics and religion. But if you have an adorable little puppy and, you know, and that's around the churches and pictures, I think it's not too pushy or too forward for children. You know, it's just a gentle story and a gentle message to warm their hearts.
Is religion something that was important to you when you were growing up?
Yes, very. Yes, it was. Yeah. Given my circumstances and everything, you know, right from a baby, that I do feel very blessed that I was given parents that supported and loved me and, you know, doctors that were able to perform miracles. And so I do feel God, I'm very grateful.
And in the context of your Christmas book, do you want to say a little bit more about the particular representation of faith that comes out there and how you're communicating it?
Yes, it says, Marley's Christmas Wishes. And it says, first, let's celebrate the happy news. The Son of God was born. One day we will all meet him, Jesus. Some again, some for the first time. So remember, the most critical part, the primary purpose of celebrating Christmas is meeting the Savior, Jesus Christ. Christmas is a time to be noble. It's a time to sacrifice oneself to help others. Christmas is a time for love. Christmas is a time to be generous. Like Jesus first loved us, we can show even more love towards one another. And that is the first part of the book.
Yeah, and is that a new book? Is that something that you've just written, or has it come out ready for next Christmas?
Yes, it came out, I think it came out shortly after Christmas, so it's ready for next Christmas. Yes, definitely it'll be ready for children for Under the Tree. And I'm grateful that I work with such an amazing team to help share this message.
Absolutely. And I was just thinking as well, you in politics as well, I always remember growing up that, you know, people I went to school with would often be very sort of polarized, that people belonged to particular or their parents that affiliated to particular political parties and favored particular candidates. But I don't know too much about politics in Canada, but do those sort of allegiances carry through? Is it normal for people to talk very publicly about their political affiliations?
Oh, definitely. And I think right now with the times we're in, that it's even more prevalent, you know, because they're looking for our leaders for some answers, for some support, for some guidance, you know, so they're probably a little more critical of leaders. But I remember as a child going to visit my dad's mom, and we sat and talked about the Prime Minister Trudeau at the time, is actually the father. Our Prime Minister, it was his father at the time, and she loved him. And we just talked for hours and hours about him. And she was very passionate about him, as many people were, the father of our Prime Minister. And I think trying to work together is a big thing, and just trying to close that gap of division that people are feeling is a big thing right now. And that kind of ties in with my book, right? That we may have different perspectives and our choices of leaders, but the universal message of love always brings people together.
And I mean, I think you put that really beautifully, because one of the things that we see, and we certainly saw it in America, and we've seen it all around the world sometimes, where, you know, when people express their particular, and they do it on social media, when they express their particular political allegiances, it causes a backlash. We had a big Brexit debate over, I'm sure you're familiar with it. Well, the debate still goes on. And it sort of really pitted people against each other, families against each other, people who thought that maybe if their parents voted in a different way to themselves, or they thought, you know, my parents are not as enlightened as I thought they were, and they voted in a completely different way to myself. Right. And it was very fractious. But have you had similar sort of debates or controversies in Canada?
Yes, was different, and definitely in my own family. Like my brother and his wife were very passionate about one party, and you know, my nephew's wife, she was involved in politics. So it's definitely right in my family. But again, I think it's more about coming together and sharing a message of love and compassion, and trying to work together so that we're all taken care of and everybody's needs are met.
And radio is another thing you touched on earlier, but I suppose we all have a sort of a go-to sort of type of music, or maybe obviously some people are more partial towards speech-based radio, but does radio play a big role in your life?
Yes, definitely. And I definitely have found a role for speaking and talking to people and listening to people when I go to the retirement homes and talks with them, and we talk about politics or religion, or you know, many different topics come up, and or talk about their puppies that they had. And I find that that's really where my strength lays, is talking and listening to people and hearing their stories.
Yeah,
like I'm doing with you.
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose podcasts in that sense are the, I'm not going to say new radio, because I think that radio has a lot of life left in it, but it's certainly an extension of radio. And I guess it means people like me have a chance to do like a radio type show, but not to do it through a formal way.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Yes. Right. And talking about politics, I absolutely love your prime minister. He gets himself in a little bit of trouble, but he always makes me laugh. Yeah. It must be the English in me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because when this goes out, he of course won't be our prime minister, because he leaves office. It's, what is it? So the day we're recording this, on the 1st of September, and he's due to leave office in just 4 or 5 days' time.
He kind of reminds me of the premier of Toronto at one time, but now it's his brother. But his brother was, he's unfortunately passed away now, but he had a lot of controversy, but was funny too at times. So I think it's all part of being a leader too, that they have to have a kind of a side that's funny, or, you know, everybody has a story.
It's true, isn't it? Because there's also, even at the time that we're talking, there's, I think it's the Prime Minister of Finland, who's, I think, the youngest world leader. She's only in her mid-30s. And she was out partying, out clubbing a few weeks ago. And people think, you know, that's very unusual for a politician to be doing that sort of thing. It's not the sort of thing that politicians, when I was growing up, were expected to do. But the fact that they weren't doing that in the 1980s or so, doesn't mean to say that they shouldn't do that now. Right. And maybe it's a way of ensuring that they're in touch with their constituents, with so-called real people.
I think so. Yes. I think she's doing a great job and nothing over the norm. I think she's just trying to lead her life and have it balanced and be able to relate to people.
As we start to wrap up, Nicola, I was just wondering whether you'd say, and I suspect that I know what your answer is going to be, but would you say that your memories, as you look back on your life, are predominantly positive?
Yes, very blessed. Yes, definitely. Very grateful.
And it sounds as though, because you've obviously, you've touched on some of the negative experiences that you've had, and some of the, you know, not least in terms of the way you were categorized when you were young, and perhaps the lack of support, which or at least the assumption that maybe you wouldn't be able to have a normal schooling. But do you feel that has all... I mean, to what extent has that impacted on you? Maybe does it sort of mean that you're able to rise above in some way some of those restrictions?
Yes, I think it's made me very appreciative and very committed to helping others. You know, like it came full circle with my dad, where when they, you know, said when I was a baby that, you know, I would just be a vegetable. And he said, no, you're wrong. And the same thing happened when he was diagnosed with dementia. The doctor said, you better start looking for a nursing home. And I said, he will be all right. I will take care of him. And so it did come full circle. So I think it filled me with compassion and kindness, that the experiences that I had.
And it sounds as though you were looking after him in those latter years.
I did, yes, for 4 years.
And that must have been really difficult, but by the sound of it, there was obviously a lot of joy as well that was able to be imparted.
Yes, very rewarding. Yes, and those memories really bring me a lot of comfort There's nothing I would have rather done. That was the best job, because, you know, the bond that we have, it meant so much to me.
Yeah, and that very much comes through your book as well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any of this what you would have expected? I mean, obviously, when you were young, as you say, you were sort of largely written off, or thought, you know, you didn't have all that potential. But but when you were young, can you remember what you might have, or what you wanted to do with your life? Were there any particular dreams that you had, any particular ambitions, any particular goals that you had, which you may or may not have realized in the years since?
Children were always my dream. I remember starting to babysit at 13. So I've always loved children. And then exploring different ways to relate to children has been very exciting, because you can relate to them through books. And children are fascinating when you're trying to connect with them, and there's so many different ways to connect, and they're at so many different levels. You know, you have some that are advanced, some, and they're all gifted in different ways. So it's as a teacher, you have to figure out a way to connect with them. And books is generally, they can touch any child, and it's very diverse. You know, they have books for every different type of child.
Yeah, absolutely. And in that sense, I suppose it's what you learn from those experiences that, you know, growing up, maybe you were written off by some people, but look, you know, the fact that you survived and have yes. gone on to do some wonderful things, I guess is something that you're able to impart then, which you're clearly doing in other children, other people, and being a beacon of inspiration.
Yes, and that's what I share with children when I go for author visits, is that with unconditional love, they can achieve what they want to. You know, so dream big and you will achieve those dreams. Yeah. And Marley's message of love, you know, to be not critical of yourself or others is very helpful to share with them too.
And are you in touch with friends from your past?
Yes, I do have, like, Facebook is wonderful for that, you know, you can keep in touch with childhood friends. And yes, I do have children that I grew up, that are now adults, that I grew up with. Yeah. So it's wonderful. And they're very happy to see my success.
Absolutely. And also, of course, new friends as well. Well, I suppose like ourselves, but people. I don't know where your furthest geographically located friend is in the world. I'm guessing that you have friends, both people that you grew up with who may have moved elsewhere. Because I've got friends from Wales, where I grew up, who were living in Canada. One's working as a doctor, but also, of course, scattered all around the world. So in that sense, I suppose you must have a huge range of friendships, old and new.
Yes, I have very close friends that are close by me, which I'm very blessed to have. A lot of Polish friends. Polish are the most caring, kindest people. I just feel very blessed to be part of their lives. And friends in Florida and friends in Europe, including yourself, England, and friends in California, America, and Australia.
Brilliant. So literally everywhere, every continent of the world. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And I've got one more question for you, Nicola, which is, are you a looking back or a looking forward kind of person?
Looking forward. I'm always excited about new ideas and new things to try. Yes. Yeah. I don't like to sit still too long.
Well, Nicola, it's been an absolute inspiration to catch up with you. And I think we covered a lot, actually, of ground very different from what we talked about first time around. So what a huge pleasure. Thank you for being my guest this week.
Oh, thank you. That was absolutely delightful.